This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell, joined by Peabody High head football coach Mark Betancourt. And Mark, first home game of the year coming up on this Friday night against Danvers. And how are you looking at this game?
Well, your home opener is always an exciting day for the kids, for the school, for the parents. Coming off of a week one loss makes it loom even bigger. We want to get in the win column, and we've prepared our team hard to correct the mistakes we made in week one, and we'll be looking to come out strong.
Yeah. Well, tell me about that. What kind of corrective action might you have taken this week in practice?
Some of our offensive line schemes, I think our guys were a little confused in week one. We've made some adjustments with the scheme that we're going to block with in week two, and we hope that those adjustments pay dividends in opening up some holes for our backs. Offensively, our backs had trouble finding the holes and hitting the right holes. We're running outside of the scheme. We've worked with them rigorously to help them understand the scheme and where we want them running the ball. Defensively, Danvers is a team similar to us that they like to run the ball. So we've put together a plan to try to stop them from running the ball and make them do something they don't want to do. And hopefully we can get them throwing the ball.
How similar are they to last year's Danvers team, or how different are they?
Well, they lost a couple of key components. I mean, Matt Andreas was a huge part of their offense. Dean Borders, their starting quarterback, was also a major part of their offense. But they replaced them with some real good athletes. We watched their film, and they kind of replaced what they lost with some pretty talented kids. They have a wide receiver, defensive back that's returning. That is a very, very talented player that we have to be aware of and make sure that we, put a hat on every play. And basically, Peabody and Danvers, two pretty tough towns. The rivalry has gotten bigger since we started playing them every year a few years back. And a lot of times you can throw the schemes out. The team that wants to win the most is going to get the upper hand.
Mark, if you were to look at your team and look at some of the things, I know you have a long preseason of practice. You have preseason games. Obviously, you're disappointed with the week one loss, but now you've practiced this week getting ready for this game on Friday. Where are some positive things that you see changing or evolving with this team?
Well, one of the positives is we have a lot of young kids in skill positions, and we've gotten that first game under their belt. You know, we knew that there would be some wide eyes, some deer in headlights looks, and some mistakes that would be made. They now have game one under their belt, so we're hoping that they'll play with a lot more confidence and not get rattled if something goes wrong, to be able to continue to get better. I think our strength is definitely in our veteran players. I mean, Eric DeMeo, Cam Powers, Noah Freeman, Nolan Murphy, Marcus Barker. We get some guys that contributed big time to us last year. We're hoping to get those contributions again this year and maybe even help them groom some of these young guys and get us playing better quicker.
All right, Coach, good talking with you, and good luck this week.
Thank you very much.
All right. That's Mark Betancourt. I'm Bill Newell. This is he's the head football coach at Peabody High School. This is MSO News Sports.
Get the skills you need to be a leader in sports and recreation. A master's in athletic administration from Endicott's Van Loan School prepares students for careers in schools, government agencies, nonprofit organizations, sports governing bodies, private sports clubs, and more. Van Loan's athletic administration master's program is 100% online with affordable tuition. Try a class before fully enrolling. Visit vanloan.endicott.edu/athleticadmin today.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies, and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
A great way to monitor what's happening on the North Shore, get the MSO Duke Sports app. A click here, a click there, you're listening or watching North Shore football. And check out the latest stories on our webpage, msonewsports.com.
And now we're going to be chatting with the Danvers High School football coach, Ryan Nolan. And Coach Nolan, congratulations on your first varsity win, a good, solid, all-around win against a really gritty Winthrop team.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm really impressed with our kids. They played hard. They showed a lot of character in class. And, you know, just getting out of the game one with a W versus a great program like Winthrop, we're really happy.
You know, there's so many things to talk about in the win. You played so well on both sides of the ball. But tell me what you saw as your leadership and how that game progressed for you. Because, you know, Winthrop moved the ball quite a bit. They just couldn't get close to the, you know, once they got close to the 50, you guys stopped them pretty much.
Well, I think both sides of the ball, Zach Dillon, actually in special teams too, Zach Dillon had an unbelievable game. He's really a rock for us. He's a quiet leader. Defensively, he makes all the calls. Offensively, ran behind him on the right side all night long, and then he hit that 51-yard field goal, and then he had a punt inside the 3-yard line. So he really, every phase of the game, really excelled. And really where he meant the most was his senior leadership, and, you know, he really helped rally the younger kids together, and I was very impressed with him.
Your offense looked pretty efficient. If one thing didn't work, you tried something else out, and that went well. And who do you give credit to? Is it the line, your quarterback, your running back, Sua? Who's responsible for pulling that off? Because it certainly worked.
I think it's a team effort. I really do. It's a cliche as it sounds. Coach Rich put together a great offensive game plan. We had some success running power and going off tackle. And, you know, at the same point, we had unselfish kids. I know Justin Mullaney's worked incredibly hard, and he could throw the ball. And we just didn't need him to throw the ball as much as we may in other games. And he was a consummate team player and just worked hard, distributed the ball. And then as far as the skill positions, and the line did great, and a bunch of kids stepped up. We had a lot of newcomers. We were very happy that we played, you know, 7, 8, 9 kids deep on the line. And they did very well. And then it was kind of a three-headed, you know, rushing attack between Taj Coakley, Matt McCarthy, and Colby Holland, all who did very well. And then the Canova kid, only a sophomore, came in and playing the ball with Kelta very well at the end of the game, too. So very impressed with the overall effort of the kids and the focus and the physicality. So, you know, it was a total team effort.
How is Taj Coakley doing?
He's doing well. He took a knee to the stomach, and I think he was a little shocked between getting the wind knocked out of him, and he had a little bit of pain, but it felt better as the day went on. He wanted to go back in the game late in the game, but he was out. The next morning, he felt better, and at practice today, he was fine. He practiced with everyone else. No symptoms, no issues. So he's a tough kid, and he's fine.
Good. Coach Ingram was saying that it's such a luxury to be able to get some of your other players into a game when you have a lead, or for that matter, when you're way behind. But it carries over into practice. He always thought that was so important, because the kids know, you know, that they get a chance to, and you had a big crowd there, a huge crowd on Friday night.
Oh, it was nice, yeah.
So how important is that to you to get those younger kids in? I mean, it takes away some playing time from your seniors who work so hard to get there, but I'm sure they understand.
Well, one thing with younger kids, and especially our second group of kids, we didn't have a JV game. So we told them when they went in, you know, you're on film, we're going to be watching you, and we want to see good things, and we saw great things. And a lot of these kids were challenging for positions and still are. So that's one of the reasons I think we're successful. We're competitive in practice. We got kids that want to go out and start and want to go out and play, and they push each other to get better. And to go out and watch those kids play the way they did, especially the young DBs, a couple of the linebackers, and D-line too, and to watch the kids run the ball, and, you know, it wasn't a surprise to us. We've seen them do it in practice. They're tough kids. They worked hard throughout the spring and into the summer. And, you know, that's an opportunity for them to go out, and it creates even more competition when we go into practice this week because we have a bunch of kids vying for starting positions and playing time.
And you have to prepare for a huge game this week. Peabody, you know they're going to be a little upset, a little angry after losing their opener.
Well, I mean, you know, anyone around this area knows the history of Peabody football and how good they've been. We've seen it firsthand the last 4 years. And, you know, I'm sure they're not happy with the way the first game went. And I know Coach Benincourt is going to have them up. And they're always a physical team. They're always tough kids. They got great tradition. They've got very good coaching. And we've really talked to our kids about the challenge of going there and playing them. And we have to be as physical as possible. You got to limit our mistakes. And we got to come out there and be ready to be competitive and to be enthusiastic and to fly around the field from the very first snap. You know, we know we're going to have to play 4 quarters of real solid football to hang around with them.
All right, Coach, I appreciate it. Anything else you want to mention?
No, just thank you very much for all the coverage you guys do. You know, and thank you. It was a great day out there at Mr. Moore Stadium. I mean, that crowd, like you said, was huge. So
it
all
was.
The support we've gotten from the school and the fans and everyone has just been great. And I just want to say thank you to them.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, man. That was so much fun. It was like a Thanksgiving Day game. It was super. Hey, Ryan, best of luck to you, and we'll talk to you later. We got plenty more games to cover.
All right, sounds great. Thank you very much.
Take care, Coach.
Thank you, Coach.
That is Danvers football coach Ryan Nolan.
At Coley Field in Peabody, I'm Marty Smith. Tim Kearns is alongside, and tonight we have the first ever, I would say, contest in Northeastern Conference North between Peabody and Danvers. Peabody comes in 0-1, and Danvers comes in 1-0 in their non-league tilts from last weekend.
Yeah, again, as we mentioned before early on, this should be a very, very good game. The Color Guard is getting ready to proceed to near midfield, and it's raining out there, Marty.
Yep.
So the local broadcast team is going to get a little damp. We also want to mention that this year marks the 26th year of Moynihan Lumber Student Athlete Award. We thank Moynihan Lumber for supporting academic and athletic excellence on the North Shore, and that's always a tremendous honor. At the end of the year, you get the female male and athlete, student athlete of the year, and it certainly recognizes both sides of student high school life. And again, they call them student athletes for a reason. You're a student first because you have to be eligible to show your athletic skills.
It's pouring out.
Yeah,
look at the lights across the field.
Yeah, there's no wind, but it's coming down solidly across the field. It is straight, and the PB cheerleaders are at the 20-yard line to our right, waiting for the team to come onto the field.
Speaking of the cheerleaders, this is September's Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, and the Peabody cheerleaders the Peabody football family has been touched by childhood cancer, and they have devoted this month to raising awareness and raising funding for the prevention of childhood cancer. And the cheerleaders tonight are wearing gold bows, and the football players have gold ribbons on their helmets, and the boosters' portion of the 50-50 raffle from tonight's game will be donated to the Jimmy Fund.
That's a great cause, and again, we had one of the techs up here earlier mention it to us, and then obviously a parent of a cheerleader came up with more information, and we want to thank them for letting us know that we could pass the information along to you. I know very good friends of mine who don't live far from the football field itself were touched by childhood leukemia, and their daughter, through the efforts of the people at Children's Hospital, is doing well. She is a freshman up at Southern Hampton University, so great work is being done. We just need to continue giving them the support they need to get that job done.
The good news is we moved away from the TV. The bad news is we moved in front of the band, behind the band. The Peabody Tanners have made their way onto the field, and they will be in the bench directly below us, and the Danvers Falcons are across the way on the high school side, if you can envision this. We'll be having the coin toss coming up in just a minute or two. Elsewhere tonight, over on our other side in the live video stream, which I just looked at, is Beverly at Gloucester from Newell Stadium. Essex Tech is over at Bertram Field in Salem for the Salem Witches. Revere is at Piper Stadium in Marblehead for Revere and Marblehead. And here's something that you didn't see either under the old alignments. Both classical and English are on the road tonight, which means both of them will be home next week. And I think we're we doing a doubleheader next week?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, so classical.
Yes, I am. Yes, you.
Classical's at Malden. English is at Somerville tonight. Winthrop is at Medford. Ipswich is at Newburyport. Hamilton Wenham is at North Reading. Yeah, it was a great contest last week with
that
Hamilton Wenham.
That should be a very good game tonight.
The St. John's Prep is at Central Catholic. Georgetown is at Lowell Catholic. And tomorrow, our feature game at noontime with my partner here, Mr. Kearns.
No, Bill is working with John Squires. I have a Saturday
tomorrow.
Off.
Triton at Swampscott tomorrow. That's a noon broadcast. Quincy North Quincy is at Saugus. It's North Quincy. Manchester Essex is at Nantucket. That's another one where they're not in the same area code, may not even be in the same time zone.
Yeah.
And Hemsbury is at Pentucket, which is really a traditional rivalry from going way back in Cape Ann League football. And Danvers has won the toss. And we are going to have the national anthem coming up here on MSO News Sports, our second weekend of high school football. And we'll be with you throughout the season and through the playoffs, which start the weekend before Halloween.
Don't go there. It drives me crazy.
We're working on a triple header for Thanksgiving. Not that I'm looking ahead or anything to that.
Yeah.
And then, depending on who goes where, we'll follow them through the playoffs.
Exactly. Well, I want to remind everybody that the scoreboard tonight was brought to you again by Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plastow, New Hampshire, featuring lumber, hardware, as well as kitchen showrooms. Great place. I know when I did my renovation, my contractor went through Moynihan Lumber, and it was problem-free.
You know, it is really... As you think back to all of the time that we've been doing football in the various incarnations, and it's been Gerard Moynihan and Moynihan Lumber that have stood behind us and the ability for us to bring this to you and stood behind the student-athletes. And now, from Coley Lee Field in Peabody, our national anthem. Tremendous a cappella version of the national anthem here from Veterans Memorial Stadium, Coley Lee Field in Peabody. You look, I think one of the themes for this football season, as we talk about it, Tim, is going to be the turnout and the numbers of players out on these teams. And you look down on the Peabody side, their team stretches from the 30 in one direction to the 35 in the other. And I think Danvers, you could fit between the 40s and still have some room for them to sit back and enjoy themselves.
Yeah, it's been a problem for a lot of the teams. Certainly in Winthrop, they've had low numbers. Gloucester did not have really, really big numbers. Again, you know, you throw in different sports, different distractions that kids have today, and you applaud the efforts of those guys that come out, and no matter what sport it is, they put the times in to compete, because it's a vital part of the growing up process. I want to mention tonight's officials. Referee tonight is Don Werner. The umpire, Bob Nardone. Line judge, Tommy Hill. The linesman, Pat McMenamin. The back judge, Rick Emerson. And sitting next to me on the clock is Phil Brody. Phil, take a bow. And there he goes.
The Falcons will kick off. And approaching the ball is Zach Dillon.
And I'm sure Coach Bancar really wanted to win this toss to get the ball in the hand of his offense and give them a chance to get something going early.
Plenty of leg in it, and is fielded cleanly at the 5-yard line. Brought up field by Nolan Murphy for the Tanners. He'll get to the 15 before he's dropped down there on the far side of the field. And it'll be first and 10 from about the 17-yard line.
Yeah, I couldn't see the Falcon who got a hold of him because he was on the ground, but he had a hold of the shirt, and he just would not let go of it until the posse arrived.
Rain continues to fall here in Peabody. Opening drive of the football game, Colby Therrien, the sophomore quarterback in his second start of the season, will put his team on offense, first and 10 from the far hash mark. There's one other odd thing about Hamilton Wenham. They don't have hash marks on the field.
Really?
Yeah. You just kind of line up where you think they're going to be. He sends a single wide to the near side.
Did they run out of money?
Franco. Behind Therrien. Therrien takes the exchange from Abe Cabba, and the handoff goes right side. Gain of about 3 yards on the pickup for the Tanners, and that'll bring the play call in. Colton Cole comes out. Eric DeMeo also comes out after that play. The gain is 4 at a 2nd and 6 for the Tanners, moving from right to left. What did you lose, sir?
I lost my offensive-defensive page.
No.
For the Danvers players.
Yeah. No. Well, we'll have to take a look. I can fish through my pile of stuff here if you'd like. 2nd and 6 for the Tanners, and Therrien takes the big pitch all the way back, and now the handoff goes right side. First down, still on his feet, and dropped on the far side. That's Cam Powers on the far sideline there.
I'll find it at the end of the game.
Okay.
Which is usually the case with things.
So first down of the football game for the Tanners. First and 10 from their own 30-yard line, 9:53.
Little trick play very early in the in the opening drive, just trying to keep them as, you know, back on the heels a little bit, keep them guessing. What are they going to do? And of course, Betancourt obviously is going to throw out all the stops early in this game.
Matthew Reedy for the Danvers, for the Falcons, comes over. Here's the handoff into the backfield on his feet up to the 25. He'll be dropped for a loss as it just didn't open up for the Tanners coming around. And that was Declan Russell.
Yeah, Justin DiTommaso sailed the edge, forced on it back up inside where, again, two or three Danvers Falcons were able to come in and close on the tackle.
I'm going to make a quick adjustment here because I can't see the guys through the screen. I don't know if that's going to mess you up or not.
Nah.
Okay. There we go. They move to the near hash mark, just about a yard to the right side of it. Powers lines up wide to the right. Defensive adjustment made by Matt McCarthy for the Danvers Falcons. Running around the right side. The handoff is to Noah Freeman. He gets strung out, and he'll be dropped for another loss. Loss will be about 3, and it's going to set up 3rd and a good 15.
Danvers real early here, showing great lateral pursuit along the line of scrimmage, Marty. They're forcing everything, all the runners to check up, check back into the interior of the line, where again the overflow of the Danvers defense is just swallowing them up, doing a great job setting the edge.
Quarterback Therrien comes from the near sideline with his play call, faced with a 3rd and 15 with 8:17 in the first quarter, scoreless. And the clock continues to run here. Split wide out to the right side now. Declan Russell. A couple yards to his right is Colton Cole. Motion man comes to the left side. Single back in the backfield. And the pitch is back there. And he's going to get dropped back to the 20 and pushed back to the 19-yard line. Luis Garrides was the ball carrier. And he is just slammed down by Taj Coakley for the Falcons.
Yeah, again, just moving laterally with the flow of the play. And number 8, Zach Dillon, was coming over. He got taken out of the play by the tight end. Number 81, Cam Powers. That's battle of two heavyweights. I'll have to keep an eye on during the course of the game. But again, because of that, Taj Coakley was able to come up, play up, and again, went right to the running back.
Colby Holland
put him down
at midfield, anticipating the punt on 4th and 19 for the Tanners. The snap, the kick. It goes off the right, bounces up to the 45, fielded at the 50, back to the 49, still on his feet. Colby Holland will get down to about the 44-yard line, so it'll be 1st and 10 for the Falcons as they are on Peabody side of midfield with 7:12 in the first.
You know, rather than going, obviously, going wide, Peabody's going to have to find a way to attack the middle of that that Danvers defense to get them to pinch in and find some success as early as they can. And that'll open up some of those wide sweeps that they keep attempting that Danvers is just stringing out for little or no gain.
Falcons going left to right from the far hash mark at the 44 of the Tanners. Taj Coakley look to the right side. The backs are in the eye behind quarterback Justin Mullaney. Coakley goes in motion now, and Mullaney calls his own number, gets down to the 40, and upended about the 39-yard line.
This is going to be a real gut check for the Peabody defense. Can they stop a Danvers team that had a very impressive offensive day last week? And again, they need it for their own confidence, their own psyche, to get in this game, to send Danvers a message as much as anything else.
The gain is 7 on the keeper for Mullaney. Second and 3. Motion now left to right. Big pitch goes to the tail, and it is Coakley. Coakley down. He's got first down yardage. Slices through and down to the 31-yard line.
No, number 14 for Peabody. 44. Eric DeMaio came flying in and took Coakley off his pins, but he had so much momentum. He went into the Superman soar, and he probably gained 3 or 4 yards in the air before he landed.
It's all coming back, though. There's holding against the Danvers Falcons, which is probably how Taj Coakley was able to get that hold and then become airborne. But it's the yellow kryptonite that takes that back. Do you like that?
Again, the key for Peabody is going to be getting to the ball quick, sure-handed tackles, secondary help coming to complete the tackle, but also be able to, again, jam down when they try to go inside and really get, again, good lateral pursuit to either side.
The ball resting on the left steer, the left horn of the steer at midfield. Would have been better if I'd gotten it right the first time. Second and 13 for the Falcons. Big pitch again. It's a reverse. Goes around for Holland. Holland hands it back and comes in, and they will be stopped at the original line of scrimmage, so it'll be third down and mark it at the 45.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Senior leadership. Cam Powers coming up and making that big hit and not letting go, and then very quickly pursuit. Came in and helped with the tackle, but he did a great job one-on-one, grabbing a running back and holding him up.
Marked the ball back at the 46. It is third and 11. First possession of the game for the Falcons. A couple of nice pickups. One was called back on the holding. And this time they're third and long. Motion to the near side as they're working from midfield. Back to pass is Mullaney. He throws, and it's intercepted. Picked off at the midfield stripe, pulled down by Cam Powers for the Peabody Tanners, and he will bring the ball to the 46-yard line of Danvers. Flags everywhere well after the play.
Well, you know, I mentioned it, Marty, that, you know, Peabody had to make a statement stop on defense in this particular series, and they did just that. Cam Powers making a big stop there after the penalty pushed Danvers back, and then getting that interception. Critical, stepping in front of the it was a screen, nicely set up, but the defensive back linebacker slid in front of the intended receiver, took it away. That's just what you don't want to see.
Unsportsmanlike conduct, the call against the Tanners. It's a dead ball foul after the interception, so it'll still be first and 10 for the Tanners, but now they're working from their own 40-yard line rather than the 46-yard line the other way of the Danvers Falcons.
You know, it's all about discipline. You made a great play. Why do something excessive at the end of it that you know, in the back end, you know is going to cost you?
Last week in the Hamilton-Wenham game, we saw consecutive unsportsmanlike conducts which on the same play, which led to the ejection of one of the players. And it was down in the red zone. First and 10 for the Tanners. Moving again right to left, Colby Therrien with the long count. Hands it off. Gets it up for Eric DeMaio, and DeMaio gets to the 45. So a workmanlike 5-yard pickup for DeMaio.
Our illustrious leader says we sound good.
Yeah.
I said, of course we do.
Abe Cava, Chris Glass, Daniel Canella, James Geary, Michael Locke. The offensive line. Ron Ramotege, Tom Wallfield, Lance Ledesma, the defensive line at the start of this football game for the Danvers Falcons. Matthew Reedy in coverage on the near side. Hand it off to Declan Russell. Russell gets pushed back. I think they'll give him forward progress, though. Tim, up to about the 49. Yeah, they'll
again, you know, the key here for PB tonight is going to be winning the game in the trenches. It's going to be, can you get the best of the guy in front of you and move the ball down the field and put some points on it?
Yeah, and we've certainly seen a battle in the first couple of possessions here. 4:07 in the first quarter. The rain has stopped, I think. The umbrellas are being folded and stowed. Third and short, about 2.5 feet. Oh. For the Tanners.
For those of you considering going over to St. John's Prep Central Catholic, it has been postponed till tomorrow at 7:45.
Eric DeMeo, the ball carrier, has first down yardage over midfield and down to the 46. So it took a few plays. They earned back the yardage that they had from assessed against them on the penalty, and this is right at the spot of the line of scrimmage after the interception. So this Peabody drive, the result of the interception by Cam Powers. On third and long for the Falcons. No score here in Peabody. Cabot first out of the huddle. Cut the backfield as Therrien is under center. Stack eye formation, handed off to the tail, and with it is Russell, and Russell gets maybe a yard up to the 45-yard line.
Yeah, it's again about creating gaps and hitting those gaps decisively. Looking to where the hole should be, and if it's there, just get into it and make something happen. Get into that second layer.
Gain is 1, 2nd and 9. Therrien puts a lot of miles on during the course of a football game, going back and forth to get the play call from the near sideline. Sends Cabba up to the line of scrimmage, puts Cam Powers wide out to the right side. Defensive coverage there for the Falcons is Matt McCarthy. Here's the handoff, up, down to the 41-yard line. Taken there is Lewis Garitas. So that's going to set up third down and about five, call it, after the 4-yard pickup by Garitas. Clock continues to run, 2:10 here in the first quarter. Scoreless, second possession of the game for the Peabody Tanners. The ball close to the near hash mark as the Tanners go right to left. Long count. Back to throw. As Therrien throws, it's complete along the near sideline. Taken there by Noah Friedman. And Friedman will be pushed out of bounds at the 27-yard line. First down yardage.
Nice little roll out to his left receiver. Saddle on the sideline. Wide open. Took the ball in solidly before he turned upfield. Got a few more yards.
So first and 10 from the 28-yard line of Danvers. The ball on the near hash mark.
So Hamilton Leonard has jumped out to a 7-0 lead over North Reading. And Gloucester's made a big stop on their own 24-yard line against Beverly on Beverly's opening drive.
First and 10. Russell. At the tail position, takes the football, runs through the middle of the line, and as Tim said, it's going to be in the trenches. And he'll get to the line of scrimmage before being drilled back to the 32, but they'll mark his forward progress with a gain of a couple of inches for Declan Russell.
Seems to be raining quite a few places along the North Shore.
So did the Denver Falcons game get the St. John's Prep?
St. John's Prep game
rained out?
Basically, I guess so, yeah. Okay. It's canceled till 7:45 tomorrow night.
Huh. Second and 10. I don't see anything coming out of the sky here in Peabody at this moment. The backs in the eye once again. Single wide to the near side. Quarterback keeps it, calls his own number. Here's Therrien, pulls his head down to the 22-yard line.
Nice job of reading the defense. Found a spot just where the right tackle had vacated, driving inward on the linebacker, and he just slid right up in that, into that hole, and that's going to be the key for Peabody, hitting those openings real quick, real hard. You churn out 4 yards. Mm-hmm. You get 3 of those, you're in first down territory once again. So right. They can't be, you know, looking for big plays. They've got to be looking for continuous positive plays during the course of this game.
Mark the ball at the 23. Near hash mark once again. Long side of the field is on the far side, where it's now being occupied by Cam Powers. Eric DeMeo, the tail, flags on the play.
Looks like somebody moved.
And initially, it looked like they were talking to Peabody about it. I think they're going to tell Peabody it's against them.
It's the end of the first quarter.
It's the end of the first quarter. So one quarter in the books. They've got to move all the way downfield after one quarter. It's nothing-nothing. Danvers and Peabody on MSONewsSports.com.
The Bradford Tavern in Raleigh is unique, with modern touches in a rustic setting, offering the finest steaks, the freshest seafood, and many quality daily specials. Serving lunch and dinner, the Bradford Tavern is open Tuesday through Sunday, 11:30 a.m. to midnight, closed Mondays. The restaurant features two separate function rooms ideal for every need, including business meetings, bridal and baby showers, or any special event. The Bradford Tavern is located at 87 Haverhill Street, Route 133 in Raleigh, and online at bradfordtavern.com.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Our company has been proud to have supported high school sports on the North Shore for more than 30 years. Our student athlete program recognizes championship performance in the classroom and on the field. Moynihan Lumber is also committed to championship performance when it comes to meeting all your building and home improvement needs. And if you're planning to change your kitchen, please visit our kitchen cabinet showrooms at any of our three locations. In Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Set for the start of the second quarter here. Scoreless between Peabody and Danvers at Peabody. Falcons and the Tanners. The Tanners have the football. Third down and a long five for them. Set for the snap. Ball dropped. But instead it's picked up and taken by DeMeo. And DeMeo, after what really looked like a broken play on the exchange of the football, gets down 5 yards. He is close to the first down. So he made chicken salad out of that.
Yeah, it was a really good job of recovering the ball. Never hit the really hit the ground. Just sort of lost control of it. Julian Edelman managed to get his hands back underneath it and go through with the play.
Fourth and short, little over a yard, just inside the red zone, far hash mark. Call it the 19-yard line. The nose of the football resting right on the 19-yard line. Opening sequence of the second quarter. Dave Cabba first out of the huddle. Send Ramon Franco far to the left. See what happens here. Hand the ball off. Turn to first down yardage for Eric DeMeo. He's got needed one. He's got about three.
He squared the shoulders up to the line on that one, Marty, and he just went full force into that line and just more or less pushed the pile himself.
Declan Russell and Cole Cuzzy come into the game for the Tanners, and that will bring out DeMeo and Noah Friedman for Peabody. Danvers with Justin DiTommaso, Franco Abatessa, Zach Dillon, and Alan E. Vargas out defensively. So now with the fresh set of downs for the Peabody Tanners, deep inside of Danvers territory, first and 10 from the Danvers 18. Powers wide to the near side. One pass led has been completed in this game for the Tanners. The handoff goes around for Franco, and there's not much there. It's Declan Russell.
Can't go to the well. Oh, that frequently with the direction after the running back. Again, you start to see the quarterback go up in the air. You know he's not getting it.
Mark it for a loss of a yard.
Yeah, defensive line did that really well. Gloucester has stopped Beverly again. Or Beverly has stopped themselves the second time with a fumble. Ryan Sanfilippo jumping on a fourth down fumble. Salem has scored and gone out ahead of Essex Tech 6-0. In the first quarter.
Scoreboard update brought to you by Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire. Cam Powers split out wide to the right once again. Matt McCarthy covering him on the long count. He's looking with the throw is Therrien. He throws and finds a receiver complete on the far sideline. He's pushed out of bounds at about the 11. And that's Colton Cole with the reception down there. And it is third down and about five for Peabody. From the Danvers 12-yard line.
Again, Coach Badenkirk has to be pleased. They're maintaining control. They got ball control working right now. They're getting positive yardage on most plays. And they're mixing in that occasional pass out to that left sideline. That was a really well-thrown ball to the outside shoulder away from the defender.
Therrien is 2-for-2 in the air thus far in this football game. Has a full backfield. Hands off to DeMeo once again, runs through the middle of the pile, slides down to about the 10-yard line, just inside the 10. We'll put it down at the 10. So it will set up fourth down and about two once again for the Tanners. 7:48 to play here in the first half. No score. Danvers knocking. Peabody make that knocking on the door here with a fourth down and two. But the ball nestled right on the 10-yard line at where the soccer circle intersects the football field. Therrien comes over into his huddle with the play call. You know, if you look at him, Tim, on the field height-wise for a sophomore, he's standing up there with the rest of the upper with the upperclassmen. Pretty tall guy.
Yeah, we were doing the game last week. Was it Lynn Claskill, the kid Fowler? He's a freshman. He looked like a seventh grader. He was so small. But you talk about tough. Holy moly, he took some shots and came bouncing back up.
Something wasn't looking quite right for Coach Betancourt, so Peabody's going to take a timeout, and they'll do that with 7:16 to play here in the first half. This year marks the 26th year of the Moynihan Lumber Student Athlete Award. Moynihan Lumber supporting academic and athletic excellence on the North Shore, and it's really something to watch and pay attention to throughout the season, because it's not just football, it's student athletes from all sports across the year. And as Tim talked about a little while ago, it is the combination of academics and athletics, and these truly are student athletes. You have your rabbit ears on tonight, not your aluminum foil helmet, I see. I can't multitask that well. Fourth down and two for the Tanners, taking advantage of every second in this timeout. Next week, we have more football. Are you going to do this? You have an update for tonight?
Yeah, I do. Well, we got a moment. Gloucester-Beverly 0-0. Gloucester seems to have gotten the better of it so far at the end of one. Salem over Essex Tech 6-0. Hamilton-Wenham 7-0 over North Reading at the end of one. Linfield just scored to take a 7-6 lead over Wayland. And Masconum and Walden Catholic 0-0 after one.
So here's the test for the Tanners. They had a fourth and one in this possession and went straight through the line. We'll see what Colby Therrien does now. Rolls back to pass. Fires near sideline, and it is incomplete. Intended for the near sideline for Noah Friedman. So from a effectiveness of scoring, this play started on the 46-yard line of Danvers for the Peabody Tanners after Cam Powers made the interception. They got the ball down to about the 10 and turn it over on downs at that spot. So Danvers will go on offense with 90 yards between them and the end zone. And Justin Mullaney has his team lined up in the end zone for the huddle.
Well, Gloucester's taking a 7-0 lead on a 4-yard dash by Mark Smith into the end zone. So Gloucester using that Newell Field advantage once again.
Mullaney. Puts Reedy in motion to the near side. Hands off to the tail, and it's Taj Coakley. Coakley along the right side. He is strung out, and he is pushed back. He may gain the line of scrimmage, but not much more as he was strung down the complete. The play took off from the near hash mark to us, and it ended on the far sideline. Loss of about a yard, second and 11. So you got Ramon Franco, Cam Powers, Abe Caba, who just turns around from his center position. Dan Cabela and Michael Locke on that defensive front for the Tanners.
Well, Masconum is on the board. 7-0 over Malden Catholic. The scores will start to be coming in, I'm sure, at a much quicker rate.
Colby Holland and Taj Coakley swap positions now, and Coakley will come to the near side. Holland drops back, almost in a safety spot. And here it is, aired out long, long, long timing pattern, and it is incomplete. Taj Coakley gets up. He wants some laundry, and he's not going to get it. Covered very nicely by Nolan Murphy for the Peabody Tanners. Also back there for Peabody.
Yeah, the ball had distance. It was out on his outside shoulder. He probably looked over the wrong shoulder for it. He had it hit his arms, but he couldn't haul it in. Tight coverage by the Peabody secondary.
So it is third down and 11 now for the Falcons, who had a convincing win last week in their home opener in Danvers. Now on 3rd and 11 with 6:18 to play in a scoreless first half. All kinds of movement. Taj Coakley finally winds up, lined up the flats on the right side. Now comes in close on the near side. Hand the ball off to the Colby Holland in the backfield, and he's going to get pushed back. He'll take a loss of another yard. So you were talking about the Peabody defense coming up big here. Danvers gets minus 2 yards on that possession as they took over on their own 10-yard line, and with 6 minutes to play in the first quarter, Danvers will be punting from deep in their own end zone. Zach Dillon will punt from almost halfway into the end zone.
Yeah, big stop there on that third down by number 52, Abe Cabra Jr., defensive lineman, sliced through, got a hold of the legs and just wouldn't let go.
Dylan Murphy waiting for the ball. It is going to bounce at the 28-yard line. It bounced out at that point, so it is about an 18-yard net punt, 20-yard call it, for the Danvers Falcons, and it puts the Tanners first and 10 at the Falcons' 30-yard line. 5.5 minutes to play here in the first half.
You know, it's interesting as we go around the various stadiums and the height of the press box.
Mm-hmm.
You know, up at Manning Field, we're probably two stories higher.
Yep.
You know, and your perspective looking down on the field changes.
Well, and as they build more tracks around the newer fields, you get further away.
Further away, yeah.
Fortunately, the players are getting bigger.
Yeah. You know, it'll be that way at Winter. We were looking at the Miller Field being worked on last week, and it's like you have to mail in the scores.
Therrien has the ball bounce out of his hands, picks it back up, and runs for some daylight back to the 33-yard line. So the loss, which would have been about 12, is a loss of about 3. So there's been, I don't know if the ball's wet or just somebody's got hard hands out there, but that's been the second or third miscue that we've seen on exchanges tonight.
Yeah, and, you know, as long as you can minimize the impact of those kind of miscues, you can keep yourself in the game. You can get back again with a minimal loss, as opposed to, as you said, you know, potential 12-yard loss. That's keeping your mm-hmm. awareness of okay, putting the balls down, pick it up, and run forward with it.
Elijah White to the near sideline, hand the ball off to Eric DeMeo, and DeMeo gets back to the original line of scrimmage, and one more. He'll be down to make it the 28-yard line. So it'll be third down for the Tanners and 8. With 5 minutes or so to play here in the first half.
Yeah, nothing fancy about what he does. You know, he just puts the head down and goes. Fenwick is down to Dedham, 7-0.
I had a note here, and I'll find it eventually. Third down and 8 for the Tanners. Dylan Peluso on the far side. Cole Cuzzy on the far side. They've got 5 receivers out. It's a lateral thrown to the near sideline. It's complete to DeMeo. DeMeo turns up the corner, and there is just a white jersey right there standing there like a pylon. And that is Franco Abatessa. And when DeMeo came down with the ball, he turned around, and there's Abatessa standing there. Ain't no place to go.
And so he put the head down and went right into him. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was, hello, my name is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't. He knows one direction, straight ahead, so shoulders square. I'm coming. Stop me. And Abatessa was just a little slow getting up because, and again, they went mano a mano on that particular stop.
So it's 4th and 11 for Peabody. Back in the shotgun is Therrien. Has Noah Friedman. Off to his left, takes the snap, fires it to the near side for Cole Cuzzy, and Cuzzy gets nowhere. There'll be a loss of another 5 yards on that as he's dropped at the 35-yard line.
So any ill effects on Abatessa were short-lived as he made that tackle.
It's Tom Wallfield also in on the tackle for Danvers, and we have another exchange of footballs here. Didn't you say something about this being a defensive contest tonight?
Yeah, you know, it's a war of attrition. It's a war of the lines. Who's gonna be able to spring their backs open? Who's gonna be able to, you know, get that key downfield that key downfield block? And right now, Yeah, both defensive lines are just punching away at each other.
1-2-3 kick, 3:33 to play here in the first half. Denver's now first and 10 from their own 35-yard line. Hand the ball off to McCarthy. McCarthy gets shy of the line of scrimmage, and he's wrestled down and driven into the ground. Marcus Barker, with the credit for the tackle on that one, just spun him like one of those old-time manual drills that you're... a fence post driller, that's what I was trying
to. Like the old auger.
Yeah, that's it. No gain, second and 10 for the Falcons from their own 35-yard line. 3 minutes or so. What do you have going at halftime, sir?
I don't know.
Scoreboard update and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, we'll do the scoreboard update. You know, usually we find somebody with an opinion to to talk to, but...
Back to throws Mullaney, and he gets it off. It is complete to Taj Coakley, and he has first down yardage. He's pushed out of bounds at the 48-yard line. Coakley pulled that one right out of the air as he was covered on the far sideline, and Mullaney got that ball off just before he was dropped and got to see how dark the sky is tonight.
Now, here's the player of the night. Boise State has a retriever that after the kickoff runs out, grabs the tee, and comes back off the field. I'm liking that.
Too much time. First and 10 for the Tanners for the Denver Falcons at their own 48-yard line. Motion man is Coakley from left to right. Backs in the eye. Handoff goes to the tail, Colby Holland. Holland met at the line of scrimmage. He'll get nothing. Elijah White makes sure he doesn't go anyplace. Off the bottom of the pile, Eric DeMeo for the Tanners. And it is second and 10. And, yeah, still second and 10. It's a half the width of the football gain on that. The two-minute warning coming up in just a few seconds here.
St. Mary's leading Marion 30 to nothing at the end of the first quarter.
Holy moly.
Calvin Johnson ran a kick, the opening kick of 90 yards and added two touchdown passes.
Looking to throw as Mullaney fires it and is incomplete for Taj Coley. Taj Coakley on the 31-yard line. He had triple coverage back there. Elijah White, Nolan Murphy, and Peabody's Carlos Hernandez in on coverage. So it is an incomplete pass, third down and 9 for the Danvers Falcons. 2 minutes and 2 seconds with the clock stopped here. For the two-minute warning, the scoreboard clock is official. Phil Brody is our timekeeper tonight.
And he will be my halftime guest.
Excellent.
Yes.
All right, handoff goes around for the Danvers Falcons. They get it up just shy of first down yardage from Matt McCarthy.
Yeah, nice little run through traffic. Kept the hips moving, looking straight ahead, and managed to wind his way through three or four potential tackles before being brought down, but not before the first down. And Falcons take a timeout.
With 1 minute and 56 seconds to play here in the first half, we remind you that the scoreboard updates are being brought to you by Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plastow, New Hampshire. And MSO News Sports invites you to check out our newest program on MSO. It's Connections, airing Thursday mornings. Timely local guests, including Heather Atwood.
And in the spirit of scoreboard update, Gloucester over Beverly at the moment, 7-0. Salem over Essex Tech, 6-0 still. Hamilton Wenham, 7-0 over North Reading. Linfield now 13-6 over Wayland. Masconomet still 7-0 over Malden Catholic. The prep, Bishop Fenwick coming back, leading Dedham 7-0. St. Mary's all over Marion, 30-0 in the first quarter. So the Saints are with them for sure.
First and 10. For the Danvers Falcons, 1:56, plenty of time remaining in the first half. They're going to flood the receiving court to the far side for the Falcons. Empty backfield, fired and is complete to Taj Coakley. Coakley on his feet inside the 40, down to the 35. Put him down at the 36-yard line. So the gain is about 4. And what we've seen a lot of Mullaney do is just go to those laterals on the far side. And he's been able to target Coakley, and he's been able to target Holland.
Yeah, well, the beauty of that, and we've seen the Pages do it a number of times, it just gets the ball wide real, real quick, and usually out there one-on-one, receiver against the defender, and the defender's playing off a little bit, so you get an opportunity with one fake to gain 4 or 5 yards. I thought that was actually going to go more once Coakley had the ball, because it didn't seem like PBD was moving there fast enough. And suddenly, after about a 4-yard gain, the defense was there, and they swarmed him over.
Danvers brings in John Strangey. Here's Mullaney looking, fires sideline, and is he inbounds? He is. He's just inbounds at the 30, so it's another first down.
Yeah, just beyond the stick. Good reading of where you had to get to. Again, got to 1 yard beyond the stick, turned around, gave the quarterback a nice Mullaney a nice square target to see. Hit him quickly, and then he was driven out of bounds.
At the 30-yard line, first and 10 for the Falcons. A minute and 39 seconds to play in the first half. Nobody has broken the plane of the end zone yet in this football game. In the shotgun for Mullaney. Actually, the pistol. Mullaney back to pass, looks, fires downfield. It is incomplete. Taj Coakley came back on the football. Must have hit a patch of something wet because he went sliding into it. He hit the ground, the ball came loose.
Yeah, the last couple of passes from Mullaney to Coakley have come up short. Either the pass is short, or he's extending that route just a little bit further than what Mullaney is expecting. Mullaney's also throwing on the run, and he also had number 53, Chris Glass, in his line of sight, and Glass jumped up in the air, and Mullaney forced to throw it over him, and I think that may have attributed to the fact that it came up a little bit short.
Two receivers right, single receiver near side is Taj Coakley. On the roll to the right side is Mullaney, fires incomplete. It's in down the far sideline. Maybe Colby Holland was the intended receiver, or maybe Matt Reedy. They were both in the neighborhood 5 yards apart from each other.
Yeah, that was a tough call, and it was definitely well out of bounds, beyond the reach of either player. It's interesting, on that particular play, Coakley was wide left, and when the ball was snapped, he took 2 steps beyond the line of scrimmage and just stopped.
So it's 3rd and 10 for the Falcons. Took this over on downs in their own territory. That brought it down to the 30. Again for Mullaney. Single back with him in the pistol, and he takes the snap, rolls back, fires to the near side. It is complete to Coakley there. Coakley gets away from one tackle, but not the second one. He's dropped by Nolan Murphy after a gain of about 2, so it will be 4th down and call it 7.
Yeah, the second and third tackle is number 82, Ramon Franco. Got a little shaken up on that tackle. Both hard hits to stop Coakley. Again, another play that looked like it had potential for a lot of yardage. Closed down very quickly by the PBD defense.
Justin Mullaney with 1 minute to play in the first half has himself a 4th down and 7. Pair of receivers to either side. It's Coakley to the near side. Mullaney rolls back. 3-step drop, fires it. It is complete to Taj Coakley. He's got the first down, cuts back to the inside, spins around, and gets down to the 6-yard line.
Well, after the catch, that was all individual effort as he cut inside. He had guys breaking ankles trying to maneuver with him. First time he got the ball in any kind of space, and he certainly put on a show for the fans down that end of the field.
It's coming back, though. Flag against Danvers.
Ooh. Was the last
personal
time you saw
foul? Yeah, it was the last time you
call.
Saw that. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's blocking the back, but a clip called. So, we'll discuss that with Phil at halftime.
So what it would have been, 1st down and goal for the Danvers Falcons from about the Peabody 6-yard line. Instead, it rolls the ball all the way back to the 43-yard line, where it will be 4th down and forever with 35 seconds for the Danvers Falcons to do something with it. So the question is, do you just air it out long here with 30 seconds? They'll put the clock in motion 29 seconds now, and Justin Mullaney comes in with the play call. Talks to Matt Reedy. He talks to Ron Romodigi.
So do you just run it into the line and get safely out of the half? Or is Mr. Coakley wide right and you give him an opportunity to go up for the ball?
Well, Mullaney with the five-yard drop rolls, takes another 5 yards, curls out to the right side, unloads it downfield, and it is complete, but it'll be shy of the first down. Complete to Colby Holland at the 25-yard line. So they ran a play that worked as time runs out here at the end of the first half. So we have the first 22 minutes of football in the books here, and our score is the same as it was 22 minutes ago. Nothing between the Peabody Tanners and the Danvers Falcons on MSONewsSports.com.
Stronger, faster, tougher. When you need the MVP of community banks, look no further than the Institution for Savings, with 14 full-service offices throughout the North Shore. We have MVP rates and an all-star team to serve you. Bank from the ball field with our 24/7 online application apps, internet banking, mobile deposit, and more. Institution for Savings, your winning team. Visit institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Our company has been proud to have supported high school sports on the North Shore for more than 30 years. Our student athlete program recognizes championship performance in the classroom and on the field. Moynihan Lumber is also committed to championship performance when it comes to meeting all your building and home improvement needs. And if you're planning to change your kitchen, please visit our kitchen cabinet showrooms at any of our three locations. In Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Get the skills you need to be a leader in sports and recreation. A master's in athletic administration from Endicott's Van Loan School prepares students for careers in schools, government agencies, nonprofit organizations, sports governing bodies, private sports clubs, and more. Van Loan's athletic administration master's program is 100% online with affordable tuition. Try a class before fully enrolling. Visit vanloan.endicott.edu/athleticadmin today.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
MSONewsSports.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at MSONewsSports or on Facebook. And you can always email us at MSONewsSports@gmail.com.
All right, it's halftime here between Peabody and Danvers. And as far as Marty mentioned, it is still 0-0. And joining me now is Phil Brody, the clock official and an actual game official who was assigned to run the clock. And Phil, when did this come into being, that they actually put a game official in the booth to run the clocks?
It's really school by school. So if the school wants an official, they do that. So it's really probably within the last 3 years that this has happened.
Yep.
From my perspective, it keeps me still in the game. I'll still do youth and sub-varsity, but I still enjoy this. And now with the advent of adding three new teams this year, Somerville has asked for a clock, Malden has asked for a clock, Salem, Danvers.
Because we met at Beverly 3 years ago.
Yes.
When we first encountered each other.
Probably you're going to see more and more of the teams asking for official clocks, just to keep everything in sync And it's very helpful to have an official in the booth because, we know the rules and pretty much we work with these. I work with these guys a lot. Donnie Werner, I've worked with for 15 years, so I know every move of him. So we call him Deliberate Donnie Werner because I know when he's ready to wind the clock. So it still keeps me the pulse on the game. It brings continuity to the game. And everything's official up here, simple as that. So if they have any questions, they
cool.
can ask it.
We saw a call, and I said I was going to ask you about it, that you just don't see a whole lot of anymore, was clipping. I can't recall the last time I actually saw a clipping call made in a high school game.
Blocking below the waist, very big this year. Huge. A matter of fact, in our association, we dedicated two meetings, four straight hours of blocking below the waist. What happened was the NCAA came up with a rule for blocking below the waist. They call it 10-2, and you basically have to, the illegal block below the waist is you have to be head-on. If you're coming side by side, that's illegal. So the onus has been put on the officials to watch for that. It's a tough call to make. Mm-hmm. It's a real tough call to make. So, that's one of the ones that we had tonight.
Yeah, because it was, I was so surprised when yep. he said clip, because you see blocking in the back or a hold, but clipping is it used to be very prevalent.
Exactly.
But then it seemed to have gone away. Was it that they begin to get statistics that said that injuries were increasing as a result of not calling that kind of a block?
Exactly. So Massachusetts and Texas are the only states out of the 50 states that use NCAA rules. Everybody have a combination, use federation rules. So what the NCAA changes, we go by. Once again, the MIAA has the final say. Sometimes it could be a rule change, and we say, the MIAA says, ignore that. We're going to go the way we're normally going. So with this advent, NCAA came out with this rule about a year and a half ago, and we sort of said, well, what exactly do you mean? And then now finally, and so there must have been asking for clarity on the college level. That's why it came down this year on the college level. So we've had, matter of fact, once again at our meetings, we've had six different college officials come in and say, this is how we mandate this rule, and this is how, these are the situations we usually see it in. And some of these guys are doing Big Ten, so it is kind of a treat to see them, as they casually say, oh, well, yeah, I was at Ohio State this week.
How much training in your season, as you prepare for the season, do you guys meet and go over rules and preparations such as that?
Well, pretty much as the Super Bowl ends, it shuts down. It really starts up in June. So, the switch is turned on midway through June, and then it's pretty intense right through the summer to the season. One of the things that new advent that we've seen as officials is the 7-on-7s.
I was going to ask.
Huge. So, where I've got a call in early July and said, can you work a game? And I'm sort of used to waiting for a game, the last week of August. And they said no. So, Peabody had played Andover. Whoever they can match up on. Before it used to be run by Under Armour, and it was like a one-day event, with numerous teams,
almost like a jamboree.
Yeah, exactly. So, but now it's like it's pretty common to have that. The other advent that we're seeing is there's a decline, somewhat of a decline in youth football. Where the numbers aren't as high as they used to be, but the numbers for flag football
Through the roof.
Well, that's more of a relaxed reaction to the concussion protocols and parents getting scared. It's okay, we'll just have them play with no pads that can run around
right.
and rip tags off each other.
Right. And to give you an idea of, and you said the magic word concussion, I have to take a test every year to get certified that I know everything about concussions. Basically, I want to say when I first started 25 years ago, it was if somebody got their bell rung, so to speak, it was sort of like, okay, shake it off and go back in.
But
now, and then when the advent came, I want to say about 5 years ago, it was a video that we watched for 10 minutes. Now we have to dedicate probably seeing videos and reading materials and taking a test. And it's probably an investment of 4 to 5 hours. So it's huge. And once again, we never want to see that on the field.
Oh, no. And, of course, the helmet technology has improved tremendously
right.
over the last decade or so.
Right. The I mean, even with the helmets, the other probably third most important rule that we've seen is spearing. But we really haven't seen that, although I did watch a game this weekend with Navy and Tulane, and the player from Tulane was called for spearing, so he was ejected from the game, and it was in the second quarter, and then he misses the first quarter. So that's the first time that I really saw it. High school football, the coaches do a really excellent job teaching the kids how to tackle,
yeah.
not leading with your head. And if it's sore out in the field, the officials will be the first ones to approach it and say, that you're pretty close to a penalty.
How many new rule changes do you generally see
excuse me.
Going into a new season?
Not many. Yeah. On average, usually, well, the NCAA, when they have the rule changes, they're good for 2 years. So, but two. At most, and you know, sometimes, as I say, there are some changes that we don't even bother with, you know, TV timeouts or stuff like that, and you know, and they want to shorten this down, and I think there's a sense that they want to speed the games up,
yeah,
you know, keep them going, keep them moving. Same thing to some extent with high school. From an official standpoint, we want a smooth flow. If we didn't call it in the first quarter, we're not calling it in the fourth quarter. Simple as that. So there's a tempo to the game. And, you know, as I say, I know the officials here. And after the game, you know, before the game, we have a pregame meeting and go over, look for this, look for that. After the meeting, after the game, we'll get together for a little while and we'll say, okay, this is what I saw during the game. You know, if it's the official on the far end, I said, you know, it was a hard time seeing you. I'm just letting you know that, you know, if you work in Peabody again,
but,
you know, due to the structure of the stadium, you know, I really need a clear signal, or the clock operator needs a clear signal. So, blocking below the waist, concussions, and those are the main rules that we're concentrating on now. So usually, as I said, we meet once a week on Mondays in the Irish American facility in Malden. And it's a 2-hour.
Otherwise known as the AOH?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.